surgeon was kind of like, well, we could wait like 6 months and try therapy to see if it strengthens enough. And I was like completely against it. I was like, I can't go on another day. I can't keep doing this. Like, I need help and I need help now. So for me, it was a lot of mental once I woke up. I was determined I wanted the bag because I wanted to feel better. And once I had the bag, I didn't want anything to do with it. And I completely forgot about the physical pain that I was dealing with prior and just wanted to go back to that life.
Welcome to Stoma for Life, the Bowel Cancer Awareness and Life as an Ostomate radio show and podcast. Your host, Rafaela, is here to debunk myths, clear up misconceptions, and help you approach the subject that so many people are afraid to talk about in a positive manner. Listen in for a new perspective. Stoma for Life on UK Health Radio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me again. If you are new to the show, I'm Rafaela, and Stoma for Life is all about shining a light on the real, the raw, and sometimes the messy truth of living with an ostomy. For those of you who've been with me for a while, you know my own story started when I was diagnosed with bowel cancer. Within just 6 days of hearing those words, I was on the operating table, and my life changed in ways I couldn't have imagined. Those early days were filled with shock and fear, and to be honest, a fair amount of confusion. Suddenly, I had to figure out how to live with a stoma, something no one really prepares you for. It takes a lot of trial and error, but along the way, I've picked up countless of practical tricks and mindset shifts that have helped me live not just a functional life, but a good life. That's why I've put together a downloadable guide called 10 Life Hacks for Ostomates. I'm calling it a mini survival guide because it covers everything I wished somebody had handed me at the start of my journey. Inside, you'll find real-world advice on things like how to choose a pouching system that actually works for you, how to look after your skin properly, what to pack in your travel kit, and how to dress in a way that makes you feel confident and comfortable. I've included ideas on handling odors discreetly, staying active, and building exercises into your life, and what to think about when it comes to intimacy, which so many people are afraid to actually talk about. There's also practical advice on maintaining a balanced diet, keeping a support network around you, and having an emergency plan so you're never caught off guard. And I know travel is a big one for many of you. It certainly was for me after 3 decades of working as a flight attendant. So I'm currently working on a dedicated travel and flying guide for ostomates. I'll be sharing more about that soon. So do make sure you've subscribed to my newsletter list to stay updated. If you sign up through my website, you will get the first 2 chapters of my ebook straight to your inbox, which I hope will give you a head start and a bit of peace of mind. Simply head over to stomaforlife.com. That's stoma4life.com. What I really want people to take away is that healing doesn't look the same for everyone. And that's perfectly fine. There is no single right way to live with a stoma. You get to figure it out what works for you and build a life around that. Today's episode really taps into that theme. We're going to be talking about bodybuilding, a discipline that demands incredible focus, consistency, and respect for your body. It's about strength, it's about balance, patience, and recovery. Imagine trying to pursue that discipline while your colon simply doesn't work, dealing with weeks without a bowel movement and the physical and emotional burden it brings. These are things that many of us take for granted, and yet they become a monumental challenge in the context of an ostomy. That's exactly why I've invited today's guest to join me. She has lived this, faced it head on, and come through with a powerful insight that I think will resonate with so many of you. After the break, I'll be back with Jordan Olek, who shares her incredible story of resilience self-advocacy and how bodybuilding has shaped her day-to-day life with an ostomy. So please stay tuned. Don't go away. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Aunt and Deck, fish and chips, Mum and Dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Stoma for Life. I am incredibly pleased to introduce today's guest, Jordan Olick. Jordan began her ostomy journey after life-changing surgery in September 2024, following years of unexplained debilitating bowel symptoms. When her colon completely stopped working, she faced urgent surgery and an entirely new way of living. What makes Jordan's story especially powerful is how she's applied the disciplines of bodybuilding, a world where your body is your focus, your tool, and your pride, to life with an ostomy. From training and nutrition to self-image and mental resilience, Jordan is living proof that your strength doesn't end with surgery. It can grow from it. Today, she'll be sharing how she found the courage to advocate for herself, how bodybuilding supports her physically and mentally, and what her day-to-day looks like now. We'll also explore the bits people really talk about, the tough days, the small wins, and the unexpected lessons along the way. Jordan, welcome to Stoma for Life. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
You know, and as I've just said, it's, I think this month marks 1 year post-surgery. Perhaps we should start at the beginning. Perhaps you can tell us how you actually reached the point of needing surgery and what went through your mind at that time.
So ever since I was very young, since I can remember, and my parents dated back to like when I was very little as well, I've dealt with constipation, irregular bowel movements, and a lot of bloating and stuff like that. And going to GI doctor after GI doctor, I was always told, you're just constipated, just take laxatives. I would end up sometimes in the ER in pain with stomach aches, nausea, and it would be the same answer every time of take Miralax. Or I tried different prescription medications as well, and even being told that it was like the strongest laxative there is and you're taking the highest dose.
Yeah.
Nothing was working. Nothing was moving. And I got to a point that I was in so much pain that I was like not letting anybody tell me again that it was just constipation. Because even if it was constipation, it was not like your day-to-day like constipation. So I had to search for doctors and doctors until my test results and the tests were ran to show the results of my colon not functioning.
Does that actually have a name, that it doesn't function? I mean, I know of Hirschsprung's disease where it doesn't work properly, but did they actually diagnose it knowing exactly what it was?
They didn't really have like a rhyme or reason. They did a Sitz marker study where I swallowed like a radioactive pill and they were hoping to see it move through over a course of days. And it was stuck at the start of my colon for the entire duration of the test. And that was what they could tell, like it was just not working. But they never were able to really give like a specific name. It was mainly just like chronic constipation. And then I do have IBS as well. And that's kind of like where like the constipation and then having IBS prior to the study being done, where it was just like, well, constipation is normal with IBS. Like you're fine, like everything's fine. And so, yeah, they didn't really have an exact name.
So, when you were presented with this diagnosis, did they say how they would proceed? What would be your best option on being pain-free or for your colon to start working or actually to lead a normal life? Because, I mean, constipation, we think constipation, okay, but if there's nothing working, it's terrible pain and that's nowhere to live.
Yeah, so when I was told that I just had the constipation before knowing that anything was like abnormal with my colon other than constipation, it was basically like having me try over-the-counter laxatives and then trying prescription medications. And I was kind of always told, like, you'll probably always have to be on something to help things move and whatever. And like, for me, it was so challenging because it was like, okay, I'm taking the medication how I'm supposed to. And nothing was still working. And then when it came to seeing a new GI doctor, which was like 40 minutes from my house, she had explained to me how she was going to do the Sitz marker study. And had it came back that my colon wasn't functioning, I would meet with a colon and rectal surgeon for likely an ileostomy bag. And I, at that point, was in so much pain. I almost was like hoping that that would be the answer to try something else because I had tried every prescription medication like known. Like they'd be like, have you tried this? Yes, I have. And it was just kind of like, okay, like something, there's got to be something.
So I suppose you were at a point where, no matter what, just to get you pain-free, to get you as your life back the way it was before, normal,
Yeah.
I'd say, like a normal functioning life without any pain. So obviously you tried all of that. When did they actually say, okay, this is your best option, ileostomy?
So they did the Sitz marker study, and when that one showed that the colon did not function, that was when I met with the colon and rectal surgeon, and it was determined that that was best. His recommendation went to him was to go through and check like my pelvic floor functioning to hopefully be able to either like reverse it down the line or be able to reattach during the first surgery and completely avoid an ileostomy. And he explained how he would really like to do this because I was young. I was 22 at the time. And then he knew like my career, like working with kids as well. Like he didn't want to have to give me the bag. So I went through the pelvic floor testing and found out my pelvic floor was pretty much shot too. And so then the surgeon was kind of like, well, we could wait like 6 months and try therapy to see if it strengthens enough. And I was like completely against it. I was like, I can't go on another day. I can't keep doing this. Like, I need help and I need help now. And at that point in my life, I had quit my job working with kids. I was working in an office job that just, not that I didn't like it at all, but like it just wasn't where my passion was. I was at the point again where I felt like I was waking up to go to work to just get money, than like go to work because like I was doing something I was passionate about. And so he agreed to do the surgery. We got it scheduled and everything. And then I didn't find out until like a week after because obviously when I woke up, I was dealing with all the mental stuff of having a bag. But when he went into the recovery room with my parent or the waiting room with my parents and my boyfriend, he had said that like luckily we did what we did because my colon was the biggest colon that they had seen, and it was so inflamed that like had they not done anything, it could have resulted in worse off situations.
Yeah, of course, a rupture or, something that we don't even want to think about. But so actually the timing was perfect and you yourself knew that this was high time to do something because 6 months, having to live another 6 months with that pain is unimaginable. And what I'm actually trying to say is that we as a patient are often our own best advocates because the doctors obviously know a lot, but they don't know what it feels like on a day-to-day basis. And then it's up to us to speak up and, well, actually claim what we want and what has to be done. In that case, you knew
Yeah.
what had to be done.
And it definitely felt very like scary to be like, no, you're going to do this surgery for me, even if he didn't recommend it right then and there, because obviously, like our doctors, we think they know best. And but for me, I had been living with constipation basically my entire life in pain and almost like normalized it and got used to it. But it was right around April to May. It started getting worse and worse. And the middle of May, I was in California with my boyfriend, who at the time was a new boyfriend. And I couldn't hide my issues anymore. And I just had to tell him. And I was not wanting to do anything. I was in pain. I just wanted to wake up. I wanted to lay around, not really do anything. And at that point, I was like, okay, something's up. When I got back, I could barely get up and down with kids. And I just got to a point that I was like, this is only getting worse. And this is definitely not just constipation.
Yeah. So now let's fast forward. You had your surgery. What was the recovery like?
So it's actually interesting because I've had a couple surgeries since then. And my second surgery I had, where I had a blockage and they had to fix things inside. I remember being in so much pain from that surgery and thinking, how did I not feel this pain when I got my entire colon removed? And my best way to describe that is mentally, I was in so much pain when I woke up and realizing what my life was going to be that the physical pain was like second to none. And so for me, it was a lot of mental once I woke up. I was determined I wanted the bag because I wanted to feel better. And once I had the bag, I didn't want anything to do with it. And I completely forgot about the physical pain that I was dealing with prior and just wanted to go back to that life.
So when you say mentally, obviously it's a huge adjustment. And were you prepared in any way for it? Did you get counseling beforehand, or were you able to actually ask for counseling on the mental side of things? Like I hear in the UK, for instance, we get a stoma nurse to come in and help us. And if we would say, okay, I'm really not feeling well, and I really need more attention to my mental health, there would be places for us to reach out to. What is it like in the US?
So for me, with my experience, I reached out to a previous like mental health counselor because I do deal with anxiety and depression. I had reached out to her and had two sessions prior to my surgery. But at that point, I was like open to the idea of like people say it's hard, people say it's an adjustment, but like I'm in so much pain, like this is what I gotta do. Like I'm not even scared, like that kind of thing. But then once I was in the hospital, I started to deal with the mental stuff more. So they did have like chaplains come in, a psychiatrist for medication, but not a counselor. I did have a stoma nurse who I saw prior the morning of my surgery where they did the placement, and they kind of gave me a rundown of like things to eat, things to not eat, and stuff like that. But it wasn't until the very end of my stay when I was able to meet with them more and like figure out like, okay, like what are the options for me to like make this a little bit more like doable mentally. But they definitely did not help as much with like providing that mental like help. And nothing was like directly referred. So it was like, maybe you should talk to a counselor, but then it was like not like referred. So thankfully, I did have a previous counselor that I was able to see and I still see to this day. But it was definitely like not as much like information as I hoped. And there were a lot of things about living with an ostomy that I didn't know were going to be a thing whatsoever until my stomach woke up from surgery and I was like, what is this?
So walk us down that road, because I'm sure a lot of listeners are curious. Either they are living in an ostomy themselves, are new to ostomy life, or have a loved one that's going through that. Perhaps you can share with us what those issues were that were also completely new to you.
Yeah, so I went into it kind of because it was more urgent and everything happened so fast. And then I didn't want to look too much into it because I'm like, it's just going to be my life. I'll figure it out. So I didn't realize that like gas and everything comes through your ostomy. And like, obviously, I knew that like output was going to come out of there and waste, but I didn't realize that it was going to be gas as well and that it was going to make noises and that I was going to have no control whatsoever over anything. That was a huge shock for me. And I had, it was the night of my surgery. They allowed me to try to get up and walk. And I kind of forgot that they ended up having to open me up and not do it laparoscopically like they thought. So I shot up really fast and my blood pressure dropped completely. And I ended up like, going unconscious, they had to call the alerts and everyone, all the nurses were in there. There was this big commotion. Then they had me tilted upside down to get the blood back into my head. And at that moment, when I was tilted upside down and they were like treating me and everything, that's when my stomach decided to wake up. And that's when I heard the noises for the first time. I looked over at who at the time was my nurse. And I was like, what is that? And I was freaking out. I was screaming. I was crying. I didn't know what was going on. And she actually laughed at me. And she was like, it's just like you're just farting out of your bag. And I was still out of it too. So I kind of just was like blank face speechless that she just like talked to me like that. And luckily, my boyfriend was standing by the door and heard it, said something to my mom, and we ended up getting the nurse switched, and everybody else was very nice there. But that experience in itself, when that happened, mentally caused me to be so self-conscious of the noises, probably until today, actually. I do much better now. There's times I can laugh about it, think it's normal, explain it in like, this is just the way my body works. But there are definitely times still that, like, my boyfriend and I will be at a restaurant or I'll be at church and, like, a noise will happen and I'll be, like, really, like, oh, I hope nobody heard that. Or, like, I hope they didn't know what that was. So that was probably the biggest blind side for me. And I still, to this day, like, if I ever were to meet someone that was going to say, like, I'm having the surgery, that would be, like, the first thing I would tell them. Like, just so you know, you have no control and everything happens through your bag. Through your stoma, I guess is the better way to say it.
Now, I just found it so interesting the way you described it, because for every ostomate, that is obviously an issue, and it's always this: will somebody else hear it? It's we can't deny it. I mean, we have it going through our head all the time, especially when we are in a quiet setting. I was at an award ceremony not so long ago, and that was the first thing that went through my mind. Everything was quiet, and I thought, I just hope I don't make a noise now, because
Yeah.
obviously, that is just something you cannot explain to like 300 guests that are sitting in a hall,
Yeah.
And it's just so interesting what you said, because the compassion part was lacking in the person that told you. And I find it is so absolutely important the way we get spoken to, the way we get told of our diagnosis, and the way aftercare is done. And I'm really sorry to hear that you had this very unfortunate incident, and I can totally get why it has left such a strain on you. You're in good company, as I'd like to say, because we all unfortunately have to go through it. But as I've heard now, you've also found ways to handle it, to move around it. And I'm pleased to hear that you have the mental support as well, because I think if you hadn't had that prior to your surgery, it would have been up to you to ask for it.
Yeah. And I think about that too, because I had, when I was looking for counseling, I remember being on a long wait list and stuff like that. And had I not already had that relationship and that set up to be able to get in with her, I can't imagine how long it would have taken. And I don't know if I would have like made it through. I mean, I know I would have, because fortunately for me, my parents, they don't live with me, but they're 10 minutes away and they're very supportive. I stayed with them for a while after my surgery for the physical needs and just like the mental and taking care of myself. And then my boyfriend as well, we've been together for a year and a half now. And even when it was still kind of new, our relationship, and I was going into surgery and my life was changing and all this stuff, he never left my side. He was at the hospital every waking moment until I went home after surgery. He was there every night. He was like literally my constant. And to this day, if there is anything about my bag that I need help with, that like I just want to talk about, like, can you believe this happened today? He's someone I know I can go to and I can tell him whatever I want, even if generally it doesn't seem ladylike or anything. Like, he listens, he doesn't judge, and his family as well has like made it so like if I'm staying the night or whatever, like they have the bathroom available for me, and like they make it very like comforting to be able to be there and not feel judged. So I can say my support system is for surely, like, if it wasn't for them, I would have never been able to get through it. And having like someone who was like, I keep bringing back to my boyfriend, but like, I think my biggest thing was like, how can somebody like be in a romantic relationship with somebody and still find them beautiful? And that was something like I just didn't understand, because I didn't find myself beautiful. But for him to, from that moment to this moment, like constantly say like, you're beautiful, you're stunning, your bag makes you even more beautiful because it saved your life and it's something that I think is beautiful. Like, having that, even though sometimes I'm like, no, you're lying, like, don't say that. Like, it's not true. You're just trying to make me feel good. To constantly hear it and him not stop saying it, even when I would deny it, helps me just be like, it's okay. And the right people will accept you no matter what you have, no matter if you have a bruise, if you have a scar, if you have a bag, if you don't have a bag. Like, if they are your person and they love you for you, it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what you have. And it doesn't matter if you have like a bag or not.
Yeah, it's so beautifully said, Jordan. I've got goosebumps just listening to you explain that, because as you said, it's this unconditional love, regardless of what, you know, it's part of you now, and he loves you no matter what. And that's what love is actually all about. And I get when you say, okay, maybe he's just saying that to make me feel good, because I've been through that, exactly that. And I've been married for 33 years and my husband still tells me on a daily basis. And it's good to hear it as well, because we have our down days as well. And we're allowed to have down days, but then it's so important to have that support group, that network of people that have your back to help you and see when you need to hear it. And even on a daily basis, it's not a bad thing to hear. And from what I gather, he's a keeper. He sounds absolutely, absolutely wonderful. So big shout out to your boyfriend.
Yeah, he'll appreciate that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Up optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle Magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Now, let's get back to something that I said in the introduction, because you do bodybuilding.
Yeah.
So I gather you did this long before you started, your journey started in an ostomy. Perhaps you can just take us back to that, and then also what your life as a bodybuilder looks like now in an ostomy.
Yeah. So prior to my surgery, I had competed in 3 bodybuilding shows, and I had been competing for, I think, like almost two-ish years. And before that, I was big into the gym, big into fitness. And that is kind of why I got into bodybuilding. And I got into bodybuilding as a means to show myself that I could do it. I also have a history of an eating disorder. So bodybuilding was kind of that outlet for me to like show a story, show that strong is beautiful, and that it's not all focused on just being thin or fitting an ideal. Like, you can set your mind to something and you can do it. And for me, it was a lot of trying to tell a story of like, you can do this and you got this, but also proving to myself, like, I don't need to live in the darkness all the time. And so it was something that was important to me. It was for me, but then also for other people as well. So I competed I was scheduled to compete in a bodybuilding show October 1st of 2022. And I was dating a different guy at the time who I'd been with for quite a while. And 2 days before my show, he passed away unexpectedly. And I still did the show. And that show was like, I've been working for this and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it for him. He wouldn't want me to not do it. And then I kind of was like going into that show, like, I'm never going to do it again. Like, this sport is cursed, like that kind of idea. And then just feeling the way I felt on stage, feeling the way I felt from the community of people I had met through bodybuilding, I competed again in March and April of the following year. And then I spent a long time, like over a year, trying to build muscle because that's what I needed in order to be more competitive. And then I met my boyfriend that I'm with now, and he was a bodybuilder as well. And I got to go through his prep with him for his shows, which was a completely different side of the spectrum experience, but it was so cool. And it was life-changing to be able to be that person for him, to be able to be in the bodybuilding world without even competing myself. And that's when I really realized, like, I truly did have a love for the sport, a love for the progress and the work that it takes to get there. And then I wanted to compete again. I was trying to lose weight. And that's kind of when I realized my colon wasn't working, because I was dieting and doing all this hard work to try to lose weight to be able to compete, and the scale was not moving. Sometimes it was even going up. And that was when I was like, okay, something's up. And that was like really what stemmed that. And then once I found out that I was having surgery, before surgery, like a week before, I threw away 80% of the gym equipment that I had, like just like different like belts and like attachments and bands and gym stuff that I would use at the gym, because if I'm going to have a bag, there's no way I'm competing and absolutely no way I'll be able to work out again. So it was all in the trash. It was done. It was gone. I went in for surgery again, feeling like, there's no way I'm going to do that again. Like, there's just, it's not going to be possible. And especially when I woke up, there was no way I was going to do it, because how was I going to even wear pants that I would want to wear and all this stuff? But within 2 weeks, I was at the gym. Wow. And I for surely probably would not have been able to get through the mental stuff with the bag without having that important piece of my life that really made me feel like me.
I said that to you before we started recording. You know, when you have ostomy surgery, you get left with the words, well, do not carry anything heavy in your life ever again, because of fear of you might get a hernia. And I know bodybuilding, I mean, is really tough training, and there's lots of weights and there's so much strength work in actually doing bodybuilding. So how did you adapt to that? Because I've seen photographs of you, and I mean, you look absolutely fantastic and stunning, and but there's just so much work in it when I see that as well. So how were you able to adapt in an ostomy to your training now?
Yeah, so well, first I will clarify that 2 weeks back into the gym was not me lifting. I went back into the gym to just walk on the treadmill and be in the environment. I was not running. I was not doing anything like super difficult. It was just walking, which they do tell you after surgery, once you can walk, to keep moving, to get the bowels moving, which is a lifelong thing for people with an ostomy. It's important to move. It's important for anybody to move. But then once I was given the clearance to lift again, I looked at my doctor and I said, I was a bodybuilder, so can I go back to lifting weights? And he said, Jordan, you have to remember that you did just have surgery. So if you were lifting 100 pounds for, say, before surgery, you might only be lifting like 20 right now. And I said, okay, but if I get stronger, can I go heavier? And he was like, yeah, because if you have the strength to do it safely, yes, you can. So what I always say, I feel like was my advantage going into lifting with an ostomy, was that I had the prior knowledge of like form. So I was doing it correct, because if you're lifting and you don't have good form, you can hurt yourself, but also then you're at a higher risk for a hernia as well. So my biggest tip to anybody with an ostomy that goes into lifting, start small and really start with learning the form for lifting and doing the different exercises before you just go into the gym and feel like you have to be like that other guy over there who's lifting 45 pounds and you can only lift 10. Like, nobody cares in the gym. Like, literally nobody cares in terms of how much you're lifting. And if someone does care, then like they're not at the gym for the right reason. And even with like having two surgeries since my first surgery, I've gone from, you know, getting my strength back up to then falling down again and having to start from square one. And it's just a constant battle of like, know what your body can handle and realize that like the whole training till failure mentality that a lot of bodybuilders have, you probably don't want to do with an ostomy anymore, because then you're risking your the way you're lifting, your form. So I always say, like, now my lifting is a little different in terms of I do less like heavy lifting and more like reps and like trying to hit the muscles in a different way, or intensity wise, like going slower so the muscle feels it more, instead of just lifting the heaviest weight that I can. And I've seen great results with that too. There's such a variety in the way that you can lift weights, whether it's just for lifestyle reasons or for bodybuilding. And there's really not a one size fits all to how you can do the gym. So you just kind of have to reframe it to like what works for you and what your body and your ostomy can handle.
Yeah, that's really very, very good advice, because you said it in the beginning, it's you've been taught correctly how to do it, because it actually makes sense. If you do it wrong, obviously you can do so much more damage. So what I get out of this is to not see it as a limitation. You can do it, but you have to start small, not see the progress that other people do as a downfall for yourself if you don't go as quickly. You can't measure yourself in the pace that somebody else is going, especially after ostomy surgery, but you can do it. And
And I always say, like, the other thing too is, like, everybody starts somewhere. Like, you have no idea where someone started. You have no idea also, like, what they do for a living. Like, for me, like, I play games with kids all the time. So, like, I'm not the strongest person in the entire world. But then if you have somebody who's, like, in a really, like, labor-heavy job, they probably just naturally have more strength than somebody who works at an office desk or does a job that's not as labor demanding. So that's like another thing to take into consideration as well when you're at the gym. I always like to think about, like, if you're like a mover where you move heavy furniture, like if you go to the gym, you're probably going to lift heavier than like the CFO of a company. So I like to kind of always think about that. Everyone's on a different path. Everyone has a different lifestyle. And at the end of the day, like, your progress in the gym is not measured whatsoever by the number you're lifting.
Yeah, that's very good. Very well said. Now, tell me, what's on the cards for you with regards to bodybuilding now in the next, say, what, 12 months?
Yeah, so I don't really know exactly. That's a little bit of a tricky question because I did just go through two unexpected surgeries after having done the shows after having my ostomy. I guess I didn't include that. I did get back on stage in April after my surgery. So 7-8 months after my surgery, I was back on stage. I competed showing my ostomy bag. And my big reason why was to just show people, like, it doesn't matter, you can do it. And I proved to myself that nobody cares. People were inspired. People did not judge me. People did not say, why is she up there? What's going on? And also, like, shout out to the show directors at the two shows that I did, the promoters. They were completely accommodating. There was the second show, I needed a little break because my electrolytes were dropping. So they just reframed the order of the show. Nobody knew. Like, you wouldn't have known if you were in the audience, but they waited for me and made sure that my health was important first. So that's kind of where I stand with bodybuilding now in terms of my health is obviously number one. And if I compete again, which I can almost guarantee I will, it's not about winning for me anymore. Before my surgeries, I wanted to be a professional athlete one day and I wanted to take it far and it be like my life. Now that's not at all what I want. And I don't see that being healthy for me to strive for. So my why for bodybuilding is showing people that you can do whatever you set your mind to and you can inspire people along the way, no matter if you can directly relate to my journey or not. So for me, like, bodybuilding is always there. It's always an option. It's always something I'm passionate about. I still go to the gym every day, but becoming a professional athlete and stuff like that is not in my goal anymore, especially because in January after my surgery, I opened my own business working with children. Wow. And that has thrived very well as well. And that is now a huge, obviously being a business owner, you got to do what you got to do to, like, keep the business afloat if that's what you want. But also, like, it drives me. It brings me joy. It's a priority to me. It's something that I wake up every day and I'm excited to go see the kids. So I guess my goals are kind of different and I'm understanding now that I can have multiple identities. Like, I can be somebody that focuses on my health and my well-being of living with an ostomy, while also still being active in the gym and in the nutrition, and also enjoying working with kids and changing lives. So being able to kind of have like a whole like identity around various things that bring me so much joy has been something I feel like my ostomy journey has really allowed me to recognize.
Oh, that's just so beautifully said. Can you perhaps share with us a social media handle where people that might want to follow you or look what you're actually doing with regards to bodybuilding, where they can follow you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram as Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N dot Olick, O-L-L-E-C-H. And then you can find me on Facebook at Jordan Taylor. It's my middle name. And then also my business on Facebook is Unseen Abilities with a big yellow sunshine.
Beautiful. I really liked what you said with regards to your focus has shifted now. Your aims have shifted, obviously because of the ostomy. But, you know, for a lot of ostomates after surgery, your life does change. And if you realize your path is going to be different, to be able to adapt, I think is a very big, well, it's actually very important to be able to adapt, because that's what I can see makes you happy now. You've just said it. You know, you're a business owner, you found your new passion, and this was because you were open to that. You weren't focused and said, okay, my life is over now because I cannot do this anymore. You've actually looked at the things that you can do and not focused on what you might not be able to do anymore.
Yeah, I think that that's a big thing, especially like having those limiting beliefs. Because honestly, like I was actually just thinking about what I was going to post, because tomorrow is my 1 year with my stoma.
Yeah.
And I was thinking back to like all of my thoughts when I came out of surgery and like going into surgery. And I, the best way I can describe it is when I woke up, I was like, well, Dr. Grodzki gave me a death sentence. My life is over. It's done. And like to think that a year ago, like I didn't even have the things I have in my life today, and how amazing it is to be able to own my business and work with families who understand and are like, like I'm transparent with them. Like, you know, I might have to cancel if I'm having a day that like things are just not working right, or having an unexpected surgery. Like when I had my intestine twisted back in July, I went to work the entire day, was fine, and hit the ground at night and was out of the office for 2 weeks. And it like being able to have families that understand that and don't like get upset or talk bad about me or the company or anything like that is just something I'm so grateful that I've been able to create that safe place for me too in my career. I'm not afraid to like be honest.
Yeah. You speak openly about it. Now, for a lot of people, that is, you know, people can't do it. A lot of people can't speak openly about it. But I think the key thing here is to have trusted people that you can speak to. I think talking about it, you don't have to talk about it in a big, well, I started doing a radio show about it. you don't have to do that. But I think you always have to have somebody that has your back and that you can confide in and talk about it. And then, like, for instance, with you now, you said you're totally transparent also for the people that you work with or that work with you. I think it's so important because that takes so much pressure off you as well. Because you don't always constantly have to explain, because they know, and it sort of, like I said, takes the pressure off you.
Yeah, it's definitely very nice. And again, like back to my boyfriend, but like having that person that you can like go to and just be like completely honest of like, I've been up for 4 hours and I think I've emptied this bag so many times this morning and I don't know why. And like, having that person you can just go to and like be honest with, or like, I had a bad bag change and stuff like that, of like, sometimes it's nice to just tell someone, no matter if it's, you know, maybe looked at by other people as like gross or weird or whatever. Like, I'm so grateful that I have somebody that I can just say it how it is and not have to be like beating around the bush. And I can just say what it is and what's happening and how it is. And he's like, oh my goodness. And he just completely understands.
Yeah, perfect. Once again, a big shout out to your boyfriend. We are
Yes.
sadly at the end of the show, but I want to leave you with one sentence that you perhaps can finish for me. You can complete the sentence. And it would be, my ostomy has taught me.
I can do anything I can set my mind to.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Jordan, for sharing your extraordinary journey. And I wish you well with all your endeavors, with everything you do, and your light will keep on shining.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, and I hope that everybody is able to navigate their life in the best way possible for them.
Thank you so much. You take care. All the best. Bye for now.
Thank you.